Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Greg Bresnitz. That was just Kid Wave with their single Everything Changes, who will be playing live in studio later today. Before we get started, we want to send a big thank you to the entire Snacky Tunes and Heritage community for helping us win the Evangelist Taste Award a couple weeks ago. We are pretty honored about it and are just excited. So thanks, everyone. In studio today, we have Lin Yi.
Hey, Greg.
Who I only know as Lin Yi because I've known you for over a decade.
It's true.
In New York. But you are here in your brand new incarnation as the founder of Mold.
That's right.
For those who are not initiated, what is Mold?
Mold is an editorial platform about designing the future of food. You can check it out online at thisismold.com. We've been publishing for over 3 years and have published about 400 stories. Everything about packaging to eating insects to agricultural systems like vertical farms. We kind of cover really the whole gamut of design and food.
Where did you land or how did you land on coming, joining design and food and how it's playing a role in the current food landscape?
Well, I have been a design journalist for about 7 years. And I was traveling to all these different design festivals around the world, and I started seeing some really interesting projects, primarily from students that joined food and design. And at the time, it was kind of a strange thing to see at a furniture fair or at a design festival, because really most of the things that you would see there are like beautiful couches and lighting.
What's a good example of something you saw that caught your eye?
One of the first pieces that I saw that really made me think was a Swedish university whose students were really rethinking the idea of the refrigerator and food storage. So part of their class was actually redesigning contemporary food storage, and they were using everything from like terracotta, which is a breathable earthenware vessel, and rethinking the shape to store everything from root vegetables to produce. They were kind of thinking about different structures for how that might fit into a contemporary kitchen. And it was really beautiful and elegant and really functional. And so that was like something that I really liked that I first saw. And at the time, really design websites weren't really covering that type of work. And then food websites, if they would cover it at all, would always be like, oh, look at this weird project. And they didn't really know how to write about it. So I felt
nothing says innovation like weird.
Exactly. Right? Like, this is so strange. And so I felt like there was a real opportunity to talk about food and design in a critical way, in a way that showed the designer's process and the thinking behind it. So I launched Mold in 2013. And since then, we've written about a lot of different things, but about a year and a half into it, I read this article about this UN report that was about how by the year 2030, there's going to be over 9 billion people on this planet. And the reality is that if we keep eating the way that we do and producing food the way that we do, we won't actually be able to produce enough food to feed everybody. Currently, we actually produce enough food, but people go hungry because of lots of kind of political reasons. But the idea of not actually being able to produce enough food for everyone on this planet is really terrifying and terrible. And designers, as people who think about the world in a way that offers kind of innovative solutions and that kind of takes into account a lot of different types of practices, from the most human practice to scientific achievement to engineering solutions, and kind of distills those ideas in a way that makes it accessible for people. I thought designers really need to have a voice in this conversation.
One of the things that I saw on your site that I thought was great was the African food dehydrator.
Yeah.
That took shelf life from, I think it was like 2 to 3 days to a year.
Yes.
I mean, it is the most, I mean, from any standards, it's not produced very well. It looks like it's shot on an iPhone. The object itself looks like almost like a hollowed out tin thing, but it actually is a game changer for farmers, from farmers who can increase the shelf life and also the income of their produce.
Absolutely. And I think that the role that design would play in something like that is not only just kind of fine tuning the functionality of something like that, but actually making it beautiful. Mm-hmm. So that people like you and I or a farmer would actually want to have that in our homes or in our yards or wherever we're producing food. Because, you know, food waste is a huge problem. I think the United States wastes over a third of the food that we produce, which is crazy. And so things like as simple as a solar dehydrator really is a game changer for so many people.
So how was the response to this, considering it's 2013? How long did it take for people to start to catch on and not call it weird or interesting, which is almost as bad as weird, but accept it as more commonplace and begin to find this as a home for food and design?
I think that people really started understanding what mold is about a year ago. I think that the general media was more interested in food technology and the way that technology can enable better ways of eating, more kind of advanced tools for preparation, food preparation. But I think that the magazine is going to be a way for us to actually explain what food design is and what the power of it is through issue-specific themes. So right now, when we talk about food design, there's so many things that that can cover. But with a print magazine, you can actually pick up something and read a whole issue that's dedicated to one facet mm-hmm. of what those possibilities could be.
And why do you feel it's important for the media to talk about the future of food, not just because of this and your issues? Like, why is it engaging besides all of the current issues?
I mean, I think the future of the food is really wide open right now. I mean, the reality is that we're going to have to change the way that we eat. It's just impossible for us to continue on the trajectory that we're on right now. You know, we can't keep eating the amount of meat that we eat. We need to find alternative sources of protein. And I think that the kind of mainstream media is doing a huge disservice to its readership by not talking about it. 2030 is only 13 years away.
I know, it's not that far. And it's also framing things like insects from like gross to necessary.
Yeah, and I think that like it's time for us to kind of move beyond the like insects are so weird or like other people eat insects argument. Like, we know that. Like, so what do we do with that knowledge? How do we transform that? How do we engage people from chefs at Roberta's to the home cook to embrace the idea of insects, whether it's through like a protein form or maybe it's through an insect burger? Like, there's just, it's just, we don't have enough time. We don't have time to just kind of dwell on the weird part
and slowly adapt it.
Yeah.
That's over.
Yeah, that time is over. Now it's time for us to embrace things. And, you know, it's not, and insects may not be the answer. Insects, I think, might be a way for people to talk about the urgency of the issue, but maybe it's about algae. Maybe it's about seaweed. Maybe it's just about other types of proteins, like embracing legumes and beans in a way that we haven't in the past. I think that, you know, people forget that the way that we eat now is only like 50 to 75 years old. Like, we didn't have microwaves and frozen foods the way that we eat now, like, you know, 50 years.
We didn't have cold storage for for that long either.
Yeah. I mean, industrial canning, like snacks, like snack food industry, all that didn't exist until like, you know, 50 years ago. So there's an opportunity for us to look beyond 50 years and think about all the different ways that we ate in the past and like find inspiration and take it from something that's kind of twee and like maker-y to something that's mainstream and embraced by everybody.
Yeah, one of the other things that was featured on Mold was the floating farm with solar power that essentially was able to desalinize the water and be self-sustainable and was a grid, acre grid farm. And that to me just, and that was pulled from Native Americans.
Yes.
And inspired by the way that they grew coastal food farms, essentially.
Absolutely. And I think that that actually talks about the role that artists have to play in this conversation, because that was actually an art project. And I think that one of the things that we're seeing is that artists, because they are allowed the space to kind of use their imaginations to think about the way that things could be, have a lot more space to play. And so they can create these like floating farms that float down the East River and provide produce, and that would be equivalent for an acre. It's kind of amazing.
We're going to take a quick musical break, and then we're going to talk about the Kickstarter campaign for the magazine and why you're launching a magazine in 2017. We have a track from the Snacky Tunes archives from one of our favorite, Laura Stevenson. The song is called Barnacles, here on Snacky Tunes.
Fight, whatever that means. put your back in it. They lay their roots deep within the pain. Free me from the teeth. Oh, but don't cut too deep.
Welcome back. You are currently in the midst of a Kickstarter campaign to start a magazine. Why a magazine?
That's a great question. Well, as you know, I come from a print magazine world. I've always loved magazines. When I was younger, getting a magazine was kind of like a gift, like from the gods. I was so excited about it. And I've worked in magazines my entire career. I feel like there's something incredible about the medium, to be able to sit down by yourself with, a piece of paper that is going to give you a window into a different world, I think has always been something really magical to me. And I think that print really offers an opportunity to kind of distill some kind of complicated ideas into a single issue that you can kind of sit with and think about. And, you know, print design is something that has always excited me. And so the two designers I'm working with, Eric Hu and Matt Sang, they're super talented. They are very fluent in both digital and print. And so I think that the way that they're able to kind of translate this idea of the future of food and design into a print piece that you can kind of engage with from multiple angles is really exciting for me.
Let's talk about distilling it down into a one theme issue. Sure. You're starting with the micro gut.
Yes.
As a focus, which has been obviously in the news for last year, both taking pills to possibly fix sickness, but also what lives down there.
Sure.
How did you land on that, and where's the intersection of that and design?
Great question. So the first issue is about designing for the human microbiome, and it's kind of a buzzy word right now. So for those people who may not be familiar with it, the microbiome is basically all of the bacteria and yeast and viruses, the microbes that live around us and inside of us. There's an amazing book that everyone should read by the science writer named Ed Yong, and it's called I Contain Multitudes. It's an incredible, fascinating read. And the reason why the microbiome is so interesting right now is because for once we actually have the scientific knowledge and technical tools to actually understand what the microbiome looks like. And one of the things that he writes is that we are actually more other microbes than we are human cells. And that's by number. So we actually contain more other things. And one of the way that I kind of wanted to talk about it was actually through a pretty interesting and emerging design discipline called synthetic biology. And the idea is that now we have the power to actually design biology and design microbes. And so what does that mean for us? And that was kind of the starting point for it. The other thing is that just kind of by doing the research, I realized that we actually, our gut health determines so much more than just digestion. It actually determines mental health in a lot of ways. I think our guts produce 90% of the serotonin in our bodies. So there's a direct connection between our gut and our brains. Our immunity is determined by our gut microbes. And so it really, our gut, our microbial ecology in our guts changes every day, every second, depending on what we eat, how we eat it, what time it is. And so it just seems like a really interesting opportunity for designers to consider when we think about the future of food, how can we design the things that we eat to be more nutritious? Probiotics are a really interesting thing. Up until now, I think probiotics are kind of like an unclear science, but now we actually have the opportunity to figure out what's in our guts. And there's startups that are actually asking for stool samples, and they'll tell you what your gut microbes are composed of.
And if you feel sick, you could actually repackage that and take it as pills.
Exactly.
Which is no longer weird, but it's interesting.
Yeah.
It's getting closer.
Yeah, there's actually a really interesting Silicon Valley startup right now that is kind of starting to hedge into this space. And it's from, I think it's a Blue Apron alum. But what they're doing...
Which is really funny.
Yeah. So they're trying to create packaged meals based on your gut ecology. And it's like a new thing. They haven't officially launched yet. They have a website up. But this kind of weird future of data collection around our bodies is not so far away. It's actually quite close. And I think that design really has a huge role to thinking about how this might be used for good.
Have you adapted your diet since you've been diving into this research?
That's a really good question. Actually, I've gotten really into pickling and sourdough. I've always made kombucha. I've made kombucha for over a decade. I kind of go in and out of doing it. But since starting the research for the first issue, which began in August of this past year, I just got really into thinking about how I'm eating, what I'm eating. I eat sauerkraut probably every day now, and I made it myself. It's the easiest thing to make. I think everyone should do it when you get home today.
And why sourdough and sauerkraut and pickling? Why have you gone towards that?
Yeah, sauerkraut and sourdough specifically because I love the idea that I cohabitate my kitchen with all these microbes. And when I make sourdough and sauerkraut, they are basically going to work for me. And it's my microbes. They come from my kitchen. And then I kind of eat them. And it's this kind of weird meta thing, but for whatever reason, it really gets me excited. I actually made sourdough yesterday, and it was the best sourdough I've made so far. But I'm into it. I like the idea. It's kind of like a pet. Sauerkraut, same thing. It's just salt and cabbage, and that's it. And then the microbes that you have in your kitchen, and it just naturally does its magic, and you don't have to do anything.
The Kickstarter campaign is running till when?
It's running till the first week of April.
Okay. And it's going well.
Yeah, it's going really well. We just launched on Tuesday, and I just feel so humbled by the outpouring of support, not only from my friends like you and the people who have actually supported the campaign, but also from people I don't know. And I'm like, who are these people? These are amazing. I think that the idea of having a print magazine that addresses the future of food is very timely right now. And it's kind of a challenge to to mainstream food media. It's hey guys, sure, you can talk about whatever food trend is hot right now, but what are you doing to talk about the future of food? How do we dovetail food trends that are hot right now into food trends that are going to help us feed 9 billion people in 13 years? I think that there's space for that, and I'm hoping that it'll be a spark for a conversation.
I want to make sure we get to one more thing before you go. Lone Star Empire.
Yes.
Your barbecue.
Yes.
Your barbecue joint. How did that start? It started 2010 and it's still going.
Yeah, we're still going strong. So before I was a design journalist, I did event production and marketing with Greg. And so I moved into an apartment in Bed-Stuy in 2008. And the first thing I did at the time was I bought a smoker. I was kind of, I don't know, I was unimpressed by the summer barbecue scene in Brooklyn. I come from Texas. I grew up eating barbecue. So I was like, fine, if I can't get good barbecue in New York, I'll make it myself. And so I started smoking brisket for my friends and my neighbors. And a friend of mine who is my partner in Lone Star Empire was like, oh, we should do this for real. And he worked at a restaurant. And so the next spring we started kind of prototyping, I guess, different types of briskets, brisket rubs and, you know, wet rub, dry rub, smoke times, all the different things. And then we launched at Brooklyn Flea and Smorgasburg. Actually, we launched at Trophy Bar first, which has been like the home
classic
yeah. kind of
incubator
program.
That backyard.
Totally.
That launched 1,000 food stands.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so from Trophy Bar, we went to Brooklyn Flea and we're at Smorgasburg and also in the summer at Summer Stage in Central Parks. So
amazing. Never stop.
Yeah. So we do brisket barbecue, like Texas style brisket sandwiches. We make our own barbecue sauce. We make our own pickles. It's delicious.
Sourdough buns this summer?
Oh, no. I think potato bun is like the right vehicle for sopping up all that delicious juice.
The microbes
juice.
Are angry. well, where can people find Mold? Where can they contribute to the Kickstarter? How can they follow along?
You can see Mold at thisismold.com. Our Kickstarter link is bit.ly, so it's bit.ly/mold in all caps, MOLD, capital MAG, Mold Mag.
Great. Well, thanks for being on.
Thanks, Greg. This is great.
I'm excited to see the Kickstarter pass. What are you going for? What's the number?
34.
You're going to get it.
Thanks.
You're fine. We're going to play a track from the archives, the Downtown Club, and then we have Kid Wave live in studio, who is en route to South by Southwest here on Snacky Tunes.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market, America's healthiest grocery store with more than 400 locations throughout the United States. Download the Whole Foods Market app on your smartphone for recipes, sales, information, and digital coupons. Or visit WholeFoodsMarket.com to find a store closest to you.
Welcome back. Kid Wave live in studio.
Hello.
Thanks for coming by on your way down to Austin.
Oh, thank you.
First time down to South By?
Yes.
Are you excited?
I'm very excited, yeah.
We're going to get to that in a moment, but we're going to start from the beginning. 2011,
yeah.
You leave Sweden, go to the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
Why did you leave Sweden? What was the music scene there? And what did you see or hope to find in the UK?
Yeah, so I moved mainly because, like, I guess I was, you know, I was 19 and I wanted to get out from quite a small town. So I figured London would be the place to go. And so I, took my suitcase and went. I thought that the scene in London was a little bit more vibrant. Where I was from in Sweden, there was literally no music scene. So that was actually the reason why I went in the first place, just to have a scene.
Where were you getting your influences from?
At the time,
when you were still home?
Mainly from my friends' bands, actually. A lot of people think, when they hear the first record, they think that it's from a lot of 90s bands and whatnot. But the reason why it sounds like that is because I was very influenced by my friends' bands, who are all quite influenced by those bands. But at the time, I had no idea what those bands were. I was... Back then, I was mainly just going to see my friends play. I listened to their records. Weirdly enough, it was just within a quite small circuit of friends.
What did you find when you got to London? Did you find the inspiration you're looking for besides your friends' bands, or was it not exactly what you had hoped for?
It was what I had hoped for. It was a lot more difficult than I'd thought. So,
in what way?
It was just a challenge to move to London when you're that young and had no money whatsoever. So I found that it was, you know, causing a lot of anxiety and stress. So I guess the lyrical content is a lot about, like, the whole anxiety, whereas the music was kind of already there when I moved. I knew what kind of music I wanted to make. So it was not a case of me going to London and, you know, exploring the music scene and taking it all in and transforming my music into something similar. I think the songs and the music were that I already had a vision when I went. But yeah, the lyrical content definitely inspired it.
Were the lyrics there before you moved, or were they adapted when you got there? It's interesting.
Yeah, no, they were all when I write, I normally just come up with musical idea, like an instrumental, and then I come up with a vocal melody, and then the lyrics go on top of that. But I think the lyrics were all kind of like in the time being came from there.
And what led you to your first EP, or when did you feel that you were ready to release Gloom?
So Gloom came out once I had... So I wrote a couple of songs and I put out a single called All I Want on a Bandcamp page online. And that generated a lot of interest that I wasn't expecting at all. So I was like, I keep writing, keep putting things
that
out.
That
works. That works, yeah. So I did that and I wrote a couple of songs and Gloom was one of them. And there was a label in London called Heavenly Recordings that I had just heard of them, and they had these amazing band on their roster, and they were basically the first label that I sent my songs to. And yeah, I was very lucky.
Just that easy.
Yeah, it sounds like a dream.
You just send it to the first one, they say, sure.
It sounds like a dream, and it was a very old school way of, things to happen. But yeah, it happened, and they picked up on it. And I didn't have a manager or anything at the time. Looking back, a manager would always have gone, let's explore our options. If one label is interested, there might be other labels. But Heavenly turned out to be a great label, and they were very supportive and ended up putting out my first EP and my first record.
Can we hear a song?
Yeah.
What are you going to play for us first?
We're going to play a song of that first record called Honey.
Live on Snacky Tunes.
Thank you. different haze, floating in water and fading away, touching the sky for once in my life. Heaven can wait, but not tonight. Even the window of things that I lack, wherever I go with you now. Some say dreaming is a waste of time. I've got nothing else in my life. And the lights you took with you, they left me tonight. Surfing down colors and rivers of blood, and the sun making shapes in my head. Some say dreaming is a waste of time. I can't get you out of my mind. Driving down on the 45, and in only second time.
So you mentioned your LP came out 2015, mm-hmm. Wanderlust. How would living in London influence that as opposed to the songs that kind of came pre-written from Sweden?
I think the songs develop with my songwriting. So considering the first couple of songs I wrote when I was 19, I'd just moved to London. I had more time to write the album. Everything happened kind of quickly, but I moved to London, put out two songs online, I got the record deal, and a lot of the songs that I had put out as demos online, they wanted on the record as well. So it was a case of going in and re-recording it, and I guess the newest, like the songs that were added last to the record were, I think, better than...
Is it in the sequencing, like as you get later in the record?
I think so. I mean, I think that my writing gets better and better, and I think any songwriter would say the same thing, because it's all like, you know, you add life experiences to it and your writing gets better. It's like any craft, you do it, and the more you do it, the better you get at it. As you know, as you can say whatever you want, but I think that's the case.
And as you grew and you put your band together, you found a band member from Sweden, from mm-hmm. Australia, from Britain. Did you like try to make it as multinational as possible? Or is that just how it happened?
No, that was just how it happened. I went to I studied sound engineering for 6 months in London. And at that school, I met Sarah, the drummer, who was from Australia. And the guitarist at the time, he's also Swedish, and he was an old friend of mine back from Sweden, and he's a great guitarist, and I had him play on the demos and a lot of the recordings because he's just amazing. And then I really wanted him to be in the band as well, and he kind of came over and did a few shows with us, and then things got really serious. We got a record deal and, you know, got a booking agent and started going around. And he just had to, you know, make that call whether to move to London or not. And he did. So now I've left London and Matthias is still in London.
So So yeah, let's talk about that. You decided to move to LA. So what did you hope to find in LA that you no longer found in London?
I guess it was just the same thing. The same reason why I moved to London, the same reason why I moved to LA. I think the music scene out there is better at the moment. It's a bit cheaper to live still. London got crazy expensive.
Kinda. It's getting there.
It's getting there. That's really the thing, though. I went out last year to LA in the spring, and it was way cheaper back then than it is now. But yeah, the scene is really good out there at the moment, I think. There's a lot of bands. You get, as a musician and artist, you have more space. You can easily get rehearsal space or studio time. Within London, everything's very crammed. It's harder. It's more difficult.
I feel like in LA, everyone has a studio in their house.
Exactly. People seem more chill about it as well, you know.
And you've been finding some local writers to work on songs with. Who have you been working with?
I haven't worked with writers. Mainly like musicians, like Jackson, who's here in the studio with me.
Hello,
right
Jackson.
Now.
Hey, guys.
A local LA musician. Plays in a really good band as well called Snowball 2. Worth checking out. just like a bit of promo there. Basically I went out to LA. I met a lot of musicians via my friends out there who are all awesome musicians. And and I just found some people to play with and go on tour with.
And did you see your lyrics adapting like when you went out to London to the surrounding of LA? And if so, how?
I think they're more personal, they're more direct now compared to the first record. I think that's more of a natural development of my writing, though. I'm not sure the move to LA necessarily inspired it. I think it's more of having more confidence and being able to put yourself out there a little bit more, which also comes with age, I guess. I mean, I'm not 90. I mean, I'm 24, so it's not like I'm getting old or anything, but it's been 5 years, so of course that makes a huge difference in terms of what's happened to you in your life and stuff. But yeah, not sure LA, apart from, of course, if you move to a place like LA, you're going to come across some, you know, pretty messed up things. So there's been a lot to write about, just because I put myself in those situations where I move from one big city to another.
Any example you care to share?
I don't know. I feel like it's just in general when, like, London and Europe is quite different to LA. So I found a big clash in kind of, I wouldn't say morals is the wrong thing, but I find that the way people live and are out there is very different. And it's not necessarily right or wrong. It's just different. And I don't know, I've just been in, like, there's been so many, like, weird parties. I went to, like, a wake, like, somebody's wake, and that was, like, a big party, like, a house party. Stuff like that is just, like, fucked up. So, I don't know, it's just been a lot to take in, I think, in terms of it's being very different from where I'm from.
Can we hear another song?
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to play for us?
We're going to play another song of the first record called Wanderlust. Upside down, you like my goldfish in a bowl, but still your life goes on and on. I'm always running, yeah, always running. Always running round. I was never reckless like them kids, because my mind was never still. It's like an ocean running wild, yet always drifting from side to side. My mind is running, always running, yet always running.
You're currently on tour with the Shins.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
That came about as my manager or somebody in that team actually sent James Mercer my new demos. And yeah, he kind of
just like the label.
I know, it sounds crazy. And yeah, he really liked it apparently and offered me to come on tour with him.
And here you are. And you have a couple shows at a show at Baby's All Right too this week.
Yeah, I'm playing my first ever headline show at Baby's All Right tomorrow.
Which is the best venue.
I'm super excited. I've never been.
Billy and the team have been on the show before. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's become after all the venues in Brooklyn shut down, it's become the de facto.
Yeah.
And not by default. It was already great, and now it's just the only one left.
I think coming from outside of New York, Baby's All Right is the venue everyone's heard about, like in terms of smaller venues and smaller bands and stuff. So.
And it's just great. And when you get on stage with the lights behind, it's awesome.
Awesome.
And then where are the shows with the Shins?
The show on Tuesday is going to be at the Bowery, and the one on Wednesday is at Music Hall of Williamsburg.
And then you are on your way to South by Southwest.
And then literally coming off stage at Music Hall and going straight to the airport, pretty much. No, we're flying out really early in the morning.
So as someone's first South By in 2017, what are your thoughts on it and what are you hoping to get out of it?
The thing is, everyone keeps telling me it's amazing, and then everyone keeps telling me it's not as good as it used to be, and then everyone's gonna tell you that it's not as good as it used to be, but it's still very good. Yeah. So I'm just super excited, and I know for a fact that it's gonna be very hectic because we're doing multiple showcases on each day, so I'm gonna go out there and probably just be running around like crazy. But then we have a day off as well on a Saturday where we're just gonna on the Sunday, I think.
Well, a fun fact is that Lin Yi and I first met at South By when I was still in college.
Yeah.
When she was working at Fader, and she turned me away from the party. And she didn't do a full body turn. She did the you're not on the list and then kind of the quarter inch turn where you're not on the inside. And then 6 months later, I was her intern at Fader because I was like, well, that's not going to fly with me. So
that's what you got to do, right?
That's what it's got to do. We want to make sure we have time for one more song. Mm-hmm. Thanks for joining.
No, thanks for having me.
Yeah, outside the tour, anything coming up? Other LP?
Yeah.
Future writing plans?
There is an EP coming out.
Okay.
To bridge over to the second album. So there is, this might be the first announcement of it. But yeah, there's an EP coming out. And the song that we're going to play now is the first single of the EP. It's called Everything Changes. And then there's more singles coming. And then, yeah, the EP drops, I think, sometime in the summer or early summer.
Same label?
No.
New label. Who's the new label?
Actually, Secret.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not the name of the label, just actually a secret.
Yeah.
So where can people find you, catch you on tour, get all the information?
They can find me on all social channels as Kidway Music. So Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, you name it, I'm everywhere. And they can, we're touring now with the Shins and doing South By, and then I'm doing two shows in LA. I got a headline show in LA coming up as well at the Echo on the 15th of April. And then keep touring.
Just keep going.
Yeah, keep going.
And writing music.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Lin Yi, thank you. Make sure to go to bit.ly/MOLD to contribute to the Kickstarter. Appreciate everyone coming by today, and we will be back next week with another episode of Snacky Tunes. Take us out. We'll be right back.
us. Tell them we're waiting. Tell them we'll be there. Or say I'm no angel, but God knows I'm ready to bury those demons. Shake out the evil. Every night my dreams say, every night I feel the edge. Everything changes, everything changes. Electric and something gets better. Or say I'm no angel, but God knows I'm ready to bury those demons, shake out the evil. Every night my dreams say, every night I feel it. Every night my dreams say, every night I feel it. Everything changes, everything changes.
Listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.